The date is June 11th, 1993, and we're watching Jurassic Park. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Dr. Ian Malcolm to my Dr. Alan Grant.
Damn, I wish I had a Jeff Goldblum accent in me. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
you just need more you know, that's what helps.
Yes,
you.
Well, I'm Colin Stewart.
And today I am thrilled to bring in a first-time guest on our show, but I am a longtime fan of his own podcast, the Oblivion Bar podcast. He's also a prolific Twitcher. Please welcome Aaron Knowles.
Hello.
Hello. Glad to be here. Very excited to have you on here.
I appreciate the invite. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Now, how up to date are you on your Jurassic-averse?
I unfortunately have not had the opportunity to see Jurassic World Dominion as of yet. I managed to get some screener tickets, and my wife ended up getting, we ended up winning some Thomas Rhett. I don't know if you're familiar with who Thomas Rhett is. He's a country singer. Star. And my wife really enjoys his music. So obviously something won in that conversation. So we went and saw Thomas Rhett instead of Jurassic World. So I am not caught up fully, but I am up till this movie. I am very much aware of what's going on in the Jurassic World universe.
Outstanding. Colin, have you had an opportunity to see the newest in the franchise?
I have not. I was between watching Jurassic World Dominion and Top Gun Maverick, and I went with Top Gun.
Okay.
Good choice, in my opinion.
I don't regret my decision.
That was actually Top Gun Maverick, the first ever 5 David A. Winers on our rating scale for our show. That was the first one that Chris has ever... I have yet to give a 5... David A. Winers, but Chris, this is the first movie he ever gave the amazing 5 David A. Winer rating to in the history of our show was Top Gun Maverick. So that says a lot because, you know, we didn't go in there with high hopes.
I mean, I'll tell anybody who will listen to me that I think that Top Gun Maverick is the movie that, like, theaters are made for.
Exactly.
It's the movie that post-COVID, like, every theater, Cineplex, like, Landmark, whatever is down in the States, I'm not sure. But they should have, like, they should have just been like, this is the movie that we are relaunching, like, theaters with. Because it was incredible.
I agree. It was.
Yeah, okay. Well, I haven't seen either Jurassic World or Maverick, so I'm a little left out of this conversation.
All right, Colin and I will just host the show. Let's go.
Yeah. Okay. This will just become a Top Gun Maverick review.
So this week we're looking back at June 1993 when the movies and theaters were Life with Mikey, What's Love Got to Do with It, Cliffhanger, Super Mario Brothers, and of course our movie for today, Jurassic Park, which earned $1.046 billion on a $63 million budget. Yeah, that's our first billion on our show.
Wow. It got a B in like the 90s. That seems incredible.
Right?
What about Super Mario Brothers?
Probably a very small fraction on that. A very hard to measure fraction on that.
Yes, but as always there will be spoilers ahead, so you know, don't get caught in the outhouse where you might get chomped by a T-Rex because I lost it. Anyways, spoilers, yeah, so if you haven't seen the movie, go hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I do have three. The first, the most phenomenal discovery of our time becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
It's a quality tagline.
It's too long.
It is.
Well, the second is much shorter. The second is, life finds a way.
There you go.
I was gonna say worst. That's the one, yeah.
And of course the third is an adventure 65 million years in the making.
There's not a fourth tagline that's spare just hold no on expense. To your butts.
Hold that's, on to your
yes, that or, hold on to your butts or spare no expense.
Yeah. There you go. But Colin, that may not be the best description of this movie, so we're gonna throw it over to you for a 60-second synopsis.
Okay, stop me if you've heard this one before. A lawyer, a mathematician, a paleontologist, and a paleobotanist walk into a dinosaur theme park. Welcome to Jurassic Park, where a rich old man has used his wealth to harvest DNA from ancient mosquitoes, combine it with frog DNA, and bring the dinosaurs back to life. But when a tropical storm hits the island and a disgruntled park employee deactivates the security system, our heroes are left out in the cold. Indeed, Jurassic Park is frightening in the dark as all the dinosaurs run wild and the T-Rex escapes from her pen, unleashing some carnivorous mayhem. After narrowly surviving the Rex attack, the group is split in two and must now contend with a band of raptors in order to make it back to each other and escape the island without being ripped to pieces. Hold on to your butts, clever girls. Life finds a way, but will our heroes find a way to keep their lives? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
You got them all in there. I mean,
I was really trying to find a way to get every catchphrase, the Weird Al song. Yeah.
So this is a movie that came out between the summer of grade 9 and grade 10 for me, and I was actually recently reminded by one of my friends from back then that this summer we went on a vacation together. He came on my family vacation that year, and we were so obsessed with Jurassic Park. Everything that we talked about was Jurassic Park. I have a book here. It's the Making of Jurassic Park book, which is like, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff. Like I was all about Jurassic Park. At one point in my life, I even wanted to be a paleontologist. And my mom always said that I never would have the patience for that because I'm the kind of guy that I go about 95% up to finishing a task and then say, good enough, or this isn't going fast enough. I'm not going to wait for that to dry. So, you know, like my model building when I was a child, there were definite issues with that. But I was all about this movie. I saw it in theaters 3 or 4 times. I remember the first time that I went to see it with someone. At one point, they curled up into a ball and picked their feet up off the ground because it's when the dinosaur jumps through the thing. He was so terrified. And it's like, come on, you're like a 14-year-old kid. Why are you so terrified of dinosaurs? But
I did that when the girl came through the screen in The Ring, so I can't blame them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Aaron, what kind of history do you have with the original Jurassic Park?
Whew. So, man, 93. I was 8 years old.
Okay.
And I know that I bugged my dad to take me. You know, my brother could come. My brother was the sports kid. He's the older brother, by the way. He was the sports kid, and I don't know if he went or not. But I remember begging my dad to take me to go see it. And I remembered just like staring at the screen and remembering, I remember like just how amazing those graphics were. And, you know, years later when they re-released the original Jurassic Park in theaters, I of course went and saw it again. And yeah. I just thought to myself, I'm like, these graphics hold up. You know, I think it had to been, you know, like 20th anniversary or something, 50, yeah, some anniversary of the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, these graphics are holding up really well. And they still do, to be honest. They are not bad from the first one. And, you know, I mean, some of the obviously practical effects were just amazing during that time. I think that was really one of the culmination, you know, the timepieces of where, you know, that animatronics, you know, those practical effects really, really showed what they could do, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is really before we started making that huge jump into like a lot of CGI. So just again, an amazing film. And I don't think that anything will ever hold a candle to watching the first Jurassic Park, despite, you know, the amazing things that they've done with, you know, Jurassic World.
Yeah. Well, I just... yeah. Cause I look at some of the newer ones and they've gone further away from the practical, but the effects are better, but it doesn't look as good because you don't have that mix of the practical. You don't have that moment of Dr. Grant lying across a Triceratops as it breathes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's,
you also don't have the same story. Like, they've tried to just make, they've tried to make this story that was really about an experience on an island, and they've tried to make it global, which is kind of, you know, they tend to do this with a lot with storylines that they think that they can just like really like wring that rag of, you know, of what would you call it? Like, you know, earnings,
yeah,
you know, like let's squeeze it and wring it for everything that it's worth. And, you know, it's just like 1 zombies.
Billion. Huh? 1 billion.
Exactly. 1 billion earnings, you know, like zombies. Zombies is the perfect kind of comparison. You have like something that really takes place. Resident Evil. Resident Evil took place in a house in an underground bunker for the first one. It did amazing. And then look at, as it evolved, it got bigger. It got bigger. City, you know, world, you know, and it's like it, the more you freaking do this, the less it has that, you know, that real adventure feel to it. And that's what's happened to me, or how I feel about Jurassic World and it going forward, because now we got humans being cloned. Now we got, you know, them changing these dinosaurs more and more, making bigger and better and badder. And it's just like, this is not what it was about. Originally, it was just, it was that awe, that whimsicality of seeing a brontosaurus in a herd. You know, it was about seeing baby velociraptors cracking through an egg. It wasn't about, you know, seeing one running down, you know, in Venice, you know, attacking people. It was so much more like whole. I don't want to use the word wholesome because the dinosaurs ate people, but, you know.
I think to your point about this story, the thing that, like, from my experience with Jurassic Park, like, I watched this movie when I was a kid. My mom brought it home on VHS one day. I don't even think I'd even heard of it because I grew up on a farm, like, in the middle of nowhere, and we rarely had actual TV. So it was kind of just a cool movie, and then lo and behold, it was really popular, so that was fun. But, yeah, like, to your point about this story, I don't think I've watched it as an adult. Like, I probably haven't watched this movie in the last 20 years, like, since I graduated high school or whatever. But I was struck by how much the story compared to the Jurassic World franchise, and I kind of remember this with Jurassic Park 3 as well. At some point, it became all about, let's get more and more dinosaurs. Like, let's get more and more dinosaurs on the screen, and we just want to see, like, and the CG, like, we want to just put that all up in your face. But I felt like in the first Jurassic Park, the dinosaurs are like spice. You know, like, they add flavor, but they're not, like, all up there. Like, they have their certain, like, set pieces, and they're there. But, like, the more, the story, and I never really paid attention to this when I was a kid, because why would I care? But the story is, like, a lot more of, like, an ethics and morality question, I guess, basically. Like, that's, like, the crux of the story that I think gets lost later on. Like, afterwards, it just kind of becomes more about, like, hunting dinosaurs and getting more dinosaurs, like I said before.
But I agree with that.
Yeah, it goes more from animal sanctuary gone wrong in the first one to, okay, no, this is a straight-up monster movie now, you know?
Yeah, I 100% agree with both of those.
Yeah.
They really took that ethical question of, you know, do we play God? Do we create these creatures that went extinct for a reason, you know, and bring them back to potentially, you know, think that as man, we have any sort of control over what is Mother Nature, you know, to an all out film franchise about what the hell were you thinking? You know?
Yeah. And now we can actually like tame them and control them.
Use them as weapons, you know, in the army and velociraptors, you
know,
homing velociraptors.
I'm surprised, like, I haven't watched Dominion yet, but I've often felt like the natural conclusion of Jurassic Park is for it to be kind of, like, Planet of the Apes style, where you start having, like, human-dinosaur hybrids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like, with Dominion, we've now got, like, the, as Scream 5 puts it, the requel, or I guess not Scream 5, the, just Scream. Yeah, this is now the requel because we've brought back all the original people for the new one, but
Which is kind of what we wanted for a while, but I don't think that this was the capacity that, you know, we wanted it in. It feels like, you know, to be honest, one of the reasons I'm not in such a rush to go see Dominion is because it feels like almost fan service just to have some of the original cast in there from the first Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if they cared about this, I mean, most of these people have gotten so kind of, you know, outdated from Hollywood that I haven't really seen them do much of anything. So are they, they're probably just out of money. They're like, hey, we'll come back if you pay us this amount of money, you know? And it's like, okay, now we have the full cast, ladies and gentlemen. The series sucks, yeah, but you get to see your favorites.
Yeah.
Jazz hands.
It's also kind of like, what are they going to, character-wise, even after watching this one, what are they going to add to it?
Yeah, exactly.
The whole idea of Jurassic Park, or the first one, is like, they're just like associated and they're kind of coming. You have, it's like, let's get the people yeah, we know love dinosaurs the most and bring them to the island and show them something they would never expect. But I'm not going to believe that like Alan Grant and Ellie Statler these last 20 years have just been like studying, like what are they going to add in terms of like, assuming they're trying to like revert the situation and take the dinosaurs like from overtaking the world or whatever. Like, they're not necessary. They're just yes, going to be around for fan service, like you said.
Yeah, you yeah, studied them. You studied them when they were dead. Now they're alive. Like, yeah, exactly. What are you going to do for this storyline? And also, like, what explanation do you have for not coming back in the last five movies? You know, it's
yeah. Like, I thought what they did with Malcolm, like where he just kind of shows up on like that one TV interview in one of the Jurassic Worlds, like that's good enough fan service for those characters that I need. Or like just a reference, maybe you have them, Grant and all these guys, be interviewed like, I told them it was gonna happen. I don't know, like
he's a crazy wild haired old yeah, man got in the he's got cabin tinfoil in the woods. Hat.
Like, you wouldn't listen to me. Nobody said, would said, believe me. I told you dinosaurs are real.
I told them life finds a way. I told them.
Well, let's jump into the original Jurassic Park, directed by Steven Spielberg, produced by Kathleen Kennedy and Gerald R. Molin, and written by Michael Crichton, who gets the novel/screenplay credit, and David Koop, who gets the screenplay credit. We talked about him with Spider-Man. He was the writer on the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man and several other Spielberg projects. I think he was like War of the Worlds and stuff like that. Have either of you read the book?
Oh, yes.
No, I okay, have not.
Okay. I mean, it's been since like 1993 that I've read the book, but I have read the book as well.
Yeah. I read, I was a big Michael Crichton fan when I was younger, so I read this, I read Spheres, I read Jurassic
Congo.
You know, World Congo, yeah, a lot of his. I was a weird kid. I went like really heavy into like adult novels like that,
yeah,
and then I read a lot of Aliens versus Predator novels as well, so I am like, you know, I'm very knowledgeable on them.
Yeah, but when Jurassic Park came out, I did the same thing. Is so I mean, here I am like a 13-14 year old kid reading all these Michael Crichton books because, you know, Jurassic Park got me intrigued. But one thing that's always bugged me about Michael Crichton's writing is just how technical he gets at times for really long periods of time. Like, Mr. DNA comes along and sums up like three chapters of the book with a 3-minute video.
Yeah. That was like interesting about Michael Crichton was his books weren't really like very big or very like long.
Yeah.
In the sense of them, but even for being not that long, a lot of it was very technical and very like just that explanatory like narrative. It was, yeah, I could relate to that. Jurassic Park the movie left out a lot of what made the book more in depth, but it didn't really take anything out that would take anything away from the movie itself. Like, it was still a great movie, which is kind of few and far between when it comes to like, you know, film to film adaptations. Mm-hmm. You don't really get a lot of that, but I think Michael Crichton's, like you said, his very in-depth analytical writing and explanative like narration really kind of helped this one be processed into a screenplay.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that you guys mentioned that, because there was points specifically like the point, I guess, where they're explaining like how they create the dinosaurs, but a lot of the stuff with Alan, even when he's like kind of messing with that kid with the raptor claw and stuff, but there are certain points of the movie where I was kind of was like thinking like, I feel like this movie is subtly educating me somehow. Like, it's actually informative.
Yeah. Despite how much of it was lies.
Yeah, but and then that was my second question. I was like, I should probably fact check some of this. Like, I would never want to go and be like, "Well, I saw Jurassic Park, and you know, I learned that."
He just walk into a like the Museum of Natural History and like bullshit, yeah. Bullshit. I probably should have asked if you guys cuss on your show or not.
But... Yeah, no, we've got that box marked. Yeah.
Okay, it's like, yeah, it's like you got none of this right, guys. Start over, you know.
And even like just how the whole movie opens, like we've got the scene with the unloading of the large crate that goes of course, yes. And the scene with the lawyer visiting the mines and looking for Amber and stuff like that. In the book, like that takes up like from what I remember, like the first third of the book at least. Like it's a long time before you actually get to see Jurassic Park in the book.
Yes.
So they just breeze over it in the movie.
And... like, let's just get to it. Let's just get to people getting eaten. But yeah, that was that. I think that that's one of my most quoted, this film overall might be one of my most quoted films. And it's so, like, the quotes are so obscure that, you know, people probably don't get them all the time. Like, I'll be like, shoot her! Shoot her! And, like, people don't get that. You know, like, if I'm playing, like, you know, like, Overwatch or if I'm streaming, I'll be like, shoot her! You know? And then the part where the lawyer's talking to the guy who's like, where's Steve Grant? You know, and he's like, Grant's like me. He's a digger. You know, it's like, it's also always be stuck in my head, like forever living rent free. He's a digger. And I'm like, okay.
That scene where the lawyer first shows up and he's on that like boat and the guy's pulling him in.
Yeah.
I must have played it back like 5 times. I don't understand. Like, I'm both like very impressed by his balance because I don't know that I would have the balance to just stand there and be pulled in like that. Mm-hmm. But also, like, how far is he making this guy pull him in from? It seems obscene.
Yeah.
Also, sort of just, like, paddled in? Like, why are you making this guy jump in the water and pull you?
Also, he's wearing, like, a full suit in the middle of what looks to be, like, the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he just took, like, a lunch break to go talk to this guy. You know, he, like, was just, you know, this is a part of Manhattan. You know, yeah, or something like that. It's like,
I mean, you do know that he's somewhere tropical, though, because he's got the Panama hat on.
Exactly, but so he's still wearing his suit, sweating his ass off.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
But yeah, he name drops Alan Grant, and so, of course, we cut to Alan Grant in Montana and find out that he's a tech phobe. And the kid, I mean, boy, you don't want to be this kid insulting the Velociraptor and saying that it looks like a turkey because otherwise you're going to be given nightmares for life.
where do you guys stand on the birds descended from dinosaurs? I'm just going to go out and say I'm not a fan. Like, I don't like when I see these feathered dinosaur drawings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes sense to me. I won't go into, like, you know, creationism or you know, evolutionary theory, things like that. But I mean, it does make sense to me because dinosaurs did have a lot of comparisons, like similarities, yeah, to current birds. And but then the other question is, you know, like, why do we still have lizards then? You know, yeah. It's like, if they evolved, why didn't they all turn into birds, you know? And then it's so, yeah, there.
but what the about lizards are still around though,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. You've ever seen crocodiles, a Komodo dragon, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. What, where's that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where I stand on it because, I mean, I mentioned that I wanted to be a paleontologist once in my life, but I never actually followed through with that dream. So,
what about the theory that this kid that is, you know, basically calling the Velociraptor a big turkey? What about the, you know, I don't know if they've actually said anything about it, but the idea that this kid grows up to be Chris Pratt's character in Jurassic World?
That's a legit theory.
That's a legit theory that I've heard people, you know, the rumblings of. It would be awesome if it was, but I think that they would have already have, you know, said something about it.
Well, I know I was staring at that kid and I'm like, why do I know that kid? And then I realized, yeah, and I realized he was one of, I think, Stephanie's friends on Full House. He was Walter. And I'm like, okay. That's why I know him, because I associate the same time period.
But... I mean, I'm kind of down for that theory. I was like weirdly watching this movie, making so many connections, or just wondering if things were connected. Like, even when they show up to the lab and the baby velociraptors are born. I was wondering, does that end up being Blue or something? Like, you know, like Chris Pratt's buddy velociraptor. And then the question I had was the Barbasol can that gets, like, lost. I'm shocked that that has never come back up in any of these movies to be, like, it's such a weird red herring because they go through all the trouble of showing it getting washed away and covered in mud, presumably to keep it cold because it has to stay cold so all those embryos would stay alive. But it never gets paid off
anymore. I thought it showed up again in 3. Because that family ends up crash landing on the original island, don't they?
Yeah, but you could just make the assumption that all the dinosaurs that were the assumption there is that all the dinosaurs were left when they escaped the park and that they've just kind of taken over the island.
Yeah.
But then in 3, they also, if I remember it right, they also find out there was like a second island.
Yeah, that's where they went to. Because that's the one that had the
aviary,
the pterodactyl aviary.
Yeah,
correct.
Which is actually from the original book, and that was the one thing that was left out of this movie, I think. Or was it from the second book? I don't remember. But we had to wait for a third movie for it to pay off. Yeah.
So I just looked it up, and the Jurassic World fan theory is Chris Pratt's character, the kid from the original movie, and the kid is only addressed as in the credits as the volunteer kid.
Yes.
Okay.
And he's actually like the child that played him at this day, he would be like 36 and Chris Pratt, or I guess as far as Jurassic World came out, he was 36 and Chris Pratt's character is 35. So there's like a lot of similarities that can kind of, and the whole idea is that when Jurassic World opened up, he applied for a job and was recruited to oversee the Velociraptor breeding program. So that's okay. An actual theory. We'll see. I mean, who knows? Maybe in Dominion they actually talk about it. Hey, I remember you.
Yeah, you scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
You ruined my life. No, kid, I made it better.
Well, you know,
it would be hilarious if there was just one line of Chris Pratt talking, or like, yeah, of what's his name, Owen.
Yeah,
talking to Dr. Grant, just like biggest side eye of. Kind of like a big turkey, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, with the kids, the Joseph Mazzello, who plays Tim, he was in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Really?
Yeah, he played the bassist, John Deacon, in Bohemian Rhapsody. Shit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the big afro? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Tim.
Good for him.
Yeah, I would love it if that other kid showed up. Okay, so when John Hammond shows up in his helicopter, I don't understand the whole time frame, because the helicopter lands and Alan Grant is running up to it, waving it off, turn this off, you're ruining everything, and the pilot is pointing to the trailer. So am I to believe that by the time Alan Grant got up there and it looked like the helicopter had just landed, yeah, that the old man with the cane had made it all the way across the trailer without being seen?
Yeah, he's flighty like that, I guess.
I never thought of it.
I kind of wondered the same thing. It's a weird I was like, what, was he already there being ready to pick up? But Alan would have known that he was there.
Right?
But, yeah.
I never thought of that. Now I feel silly.
we get to see the setup of Nedry and his future of deception. What a dumb name, Nedry.
Newman. No matter what his actual name is in this movie, he's still Newman.
Right? It's
like, yeah. Basically the exact same character.
Yeah.
I want to see, like, how they... I got to look it up and see how they actually, like, spelled his name. Because in my mind, I'm just thinking, like, a respelling of the word nerdy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure my notes auto-corrected to that at one point. Yeah. Pretty sure I had to force that one through.
Yep, it's just nerdy. Whoever wrote the script was like, all right, nerdy guy who basically kills everybody. Nerdy guy. We'll call him Nedry. Screw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and Samuel Jackson getting into it right at the beginning, along with, you know, that was always the interesting thing to me is, you know, especially growing up, it got even weirder, was Hammond is like this, like, just ridiculously rich old guy who literally paid all the money out of his own pocket to genetically create recreate dinosaurs, okay? And he's arguing with his IT guy?
Yeah. Honestly, watching this movie, I couldn't help but just feel like Hammond is Elon Musk. Like, that's who he that's the vibe he gives me of just like, I'm so rich, I'm going to do whatever I want. And like, and then it made me think that Jurassic Park, realistically, among like, I feel all kind of these like science fiction ish films, it's like the most plausible to actually happen in reality. So then I wondered, like, maybe I wonder if Elon Musk is like working, he's got some side project.
Well,
I was gonna say, you talking about the guy that actually sold flamethrowers?
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like the Jurassic Verse could be in the same universe as Fast and the Furious. You know, like,
I would love that too.
You could easily see, yeah, the John Hammond descendant that now is in charge of Jurassic Park being some sort of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos type figure that wants to get some dinosaurs into space or something. Yeah. I don't know, you know?
Space dinosaurs.
Didn't they actually talk about that at one point? There's, I think it was either supposed to be a Jurassic Park Fast and the Furious crossover or even a Transformers Fast and the Furious crossover.
Yeah, I thought it was I've heard Transformers Fast and the Furious.
You need to throw all three together. Yes. Come on, yes. Right
and
there.
And then it's Chuck and G.I. Joe for good measure.
Exactly.
So now we're on our way to Jurassic Park in the helicopter, and we get to meet Malcolm, the chaos theory mathematician. Whoa, boy, Jeff Goldblum, one man that definitely makes my Kinsey scale slide. Oh, boy. I mean, you know, the way that he comes on to Ellie, it's just like, man, I would fuck Malcolm. Like, Jeff Goldblum is at his Jeff Goldblumiest in this movie. I love Ian Malcolm, and that casting, they nailed it. That's 100%. One thing I remember from reading the book around the time that the movie came out, that it's like, yeah, they got Ian Malcolm right.
100%, like, just spot on with Jeff Goldblum. And to this day, it's like, you can't necessarily see, like, Jeff Goldblum without thinking about Jurassic Park, but at the same time, he is utterly and absolutely his own, like, being, you know, his own sphere of entertainment.
Yeah.
He's kind of like James Spader in that way, where it's like, I feel like you cast the guy for the character, not like, or is that what I'm thinking? Yeah. If you want that to be the character, you cast that guy, because yeah, that's all you're getting. You're not gonna get, like, he's not gonna be any different.
Yeah, if you want Christopher Walken, you don't ask for a Christopher Walken type. You go to the source. Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension?
Oh. Yes, we did that one on our show. Okay. It was a first-time watch for both of us. Yeah, we did that about 6-7 episodes ago. Yeah. So it's a fresh watch for us, too.
So, yeah, because, again, you got Jeff Goldblum, who is in that, and it's just, it throws you off seeing, like, you'll go from this to seeing him now. Like, I love him in Wes Anderson films. I absolutely love him, especially, like, The Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you go back and you watch him in something like, you know, this, or you go back and watch him in something like, you know, Buckaroo Banzai. And then also, like, his appearances when he's been on, like, SNL.
Yeah.
Like,
I like him.
There's Conan. A skit between Jeff Goldblum and Will Ferrell as Harry Carey, and it is the funniest thing, because Jeff Goldblum literally has no idea what's going on. he's just trying to go with it, but it is one of the funniest moments I've ever seen on SNL.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed listening to him. I think he's done two appearances on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and like, those two personalities are just like, they're so polar opposite, but they work so, like, it's just so funny, their conversations. And it's like Jeff Goldblum is just making Conan uncomfortable, and then Conan uncomfortable is just, like, so manic.
Yeah. Jeff Goldblum has this weird ability to, like, really pretty much, like he's magnetic, so he draws all the attention. If he's on screen, he draws the attention. If he's in a room, I'm sure he's just, like, the life of the party, even though he's just so odd sometimes. even like I'll tell you this, Thor Ragnarok is one of my favorite, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe films.
Yeah, it was high on our list too.
And exactly because Jeff Goldblum, there's one specific scene in there where he's sitting there, and this is when they bring, you know, when Valkyrie brings Thor to him, and he's talking to the other girl about paying him, and then Valkyrie just like rubs his face, and he's just like. You know, he's just like he's just kind of smitten with her touching his face, and that scene steals the entire movie for me. Like he has that ability, and it's amazing. You know, just no matter what he's in.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the only movie I'm kind of thinking right now where Jeff Goldblum is like at his least Jeff Goldblum is kind of Independence Day. Like he kind of gets drowned out a little bit by Will Smith in that movie.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, he just gets slapped by him.
I just got that touche.
But yeah, he nerds it up in that one. He's not upping the suave side, it's the nerd side. And I mean, that's what you get in The Fly, is you get the nerd that turns into like the cool guy that turns into the monster.
Oh man, yeah.
But you know, it's you know, there you go. You've seen those are the two different sides of Jeff Goldblum, and The Fly gives you both. I mean, someone like Sam Neill, I mean, I don't really think of him in anything else. Like, I rack my brain and try to think of another Sam Neill movie outside of the Jurassic franchise, but I know I've seen some. Like, just none of them are standouts.
Yeah, I can't think of one.
See, exactly. So, I mean, it's like, at least Jeff Goldblum, he stays relevant. Like, Sam Neill, being in the new one, it almost feels like, oh yeah, that guy.
Like when you Google him, the four movies that come up are Jurassic World Dominion, Jurassic Park 3, and Jurassic Park, and then I guess he was on Peaky Blinders. So
it says he was in Thor Ragnarok. He was the actor.
Oh yeah, Odin. That's right. Yeah, he was fake Odin.
Yeah.
Huh.
In the play that Loki was putting on.
Oh, he was in Hunt for the Wilder People. I love that movie.
Oh, I've never heard of that one.
It's a New Zealand like indie film.
He was in Bicentennial Man. Yeah. Man, I'm just like I'm going down his filmography, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay. The Jungle Book? Which one? Jesus. Oh, there's a movie I recognize. Jurassic Park.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna say a lot of these movies I do not recognize at all. Well, they're movies that I know, but they're movies like I would have never watched, like The Commuter or Escape Plan.
Was Cold Mountain on that list? For some reason, Cold Mountain is standing out in my mind.
I'm not seeing it.
No, okay. I'm way
the
off.
Horse Whisperer.
I mean, he's got a lot like under his name, so like maybe, but like, oh, Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Gahool.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That classic.
That old chestnut.
So dinosaurs, you set it up at the top. The special effects are still pretty good. Like the Brontosauruses, I found a little weak, but I mean, still overall though, like. The stuff that he was doing with the computer animation by being able to move the camera was absolutely groundbreaking in 1993, and it really is still beautiful to see.
Yeah. I think to your point, Sean, like, and I watched, to like prepare for this movie, I also watched the Netflix like movies that made us for Jurassic Park. I think the thing that makes Jurassic Park great is like, it is the dawn of CGI. Like I remember this movie being like what Avatar is to 3D movies. Like I remember it being a game changer.
Yeah.
But it's the mix of it's like using CGI where it was absolutely necessary, but still having the practical effects to make it to like bring it up close and to make it more tangible or real, I guess. That I think makes the movie as good as it is. Like, I don't think this movie would have been as good if it was all CGI dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's for sure. Or like their original plan of stop motion.
Oh yeah,
like that would have been. Yeah, any of those behind the scene things that you see of Jurassic Park, where they show you what the test footage looked like of the stop motion, it's like, okay, yeah, yeah, that's a step up what they did.
Yeah, that would have been that would have been not great. It still looked too cartoony.
See, oh my god, if they would have done stop motion, it would be like some of those old, like Godzilla films or those old, mm-hmm. like...
Jason and the Argonauts.
Thank you! Yeah, you get out of my brain, man. Jason and the Argonauts with the skeletons.
Yeah.
Clash the Titans.
Yep.
Yeah.
The old one.
Yeah. Oh, you mean, you don't mean the Sam Worthington one? Well, yeah. I guess I said brontosauruses. I should have said brachiosauruses. Ooh, I believe these are actually brachiosauruses.
For shame.
That's right. The sliding doors, Sean, who went off and became a paleontologist, is just cringing because I called it a brontosaurus.
Well, I mean, not to get all technical on you, but I mean, you should know that a lot of these dinosaurs appeared actually in the Cretaceous period and not the Jurassic. So it should have been a Cretaceous Park.
That's right. That's
if you will.
You bet Jurassic should be.
Yeah. There's also a lot of people who like to point out the fact that, like, the raptors they're not actual velociraptors. They're a different type of dinosaur. Velociraptors are actually about the size of a dog.
Oh. And have feathers, probably.
I guess. According to some sources. Fake news.
It's funny, once they get to the visitor center, seeing how small scale it is in the original Jurassic Park. And, like, how grand it seemed at the time when I first saw this movie. But now, compared to some of the things that we have seen in future Jurassic Worlds, I mean, it really is the Disneyland versus Disney World debate going on between these two different theme parks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they really did kind of, like, use the angles and the view to make it seem... You know, just like a grand building with, you know, like different rooms and a whole experience. But again, that I think I would say that that kind of changes with how we look at our experiences when we do go to places like this. Like the attraction there, when people went to Jurassic Park, should have been touring the facility and seeing the dinosaurs. Whereas later on, Jurassic World, again, it was, you see all these people very much having the Disney World experience, having drinks, like with the guy who's running with the two martinis, you know, and like all like the hotels and making it kind of like a bigger
Sea World exhibit.
Exactly. So it was less about the experience. It was more about the technology driven experiences that you could pay for. So,
well, now the one thing, I mean, you did mention hotels. There should be a place to stay on this island, and that's something else that you never see.
True.
Or are they expected to fly out for the day and then go back? Like, what is the Jurassic Park experience once this place actually opens?
What am I spending all this money on? Tell me.
It also seemed like, how much do you think it would cost to go to Jurassic Park? Like, it doesn't seem accessible to the public. Like, yeah. Jurassic World did, because it's...
Wasn't it a cruise that stopped there or something like that?
Something like that. But Jurassic Park kind of seems like it's way out of the way, and you can only get there by helicopter, and...
They probably hadn't even gotten there yet, as far as the planning phase. I mean, look at that. They were still, like, programming their computer systems. They were still debugging and figuring out the operating system and locks and doors and phones, and we got phones, you know, like all this stuff. So I would say that as far as them thinking about like what the typical Jurassic Park package, you know, deluxe would be, they probably hadn't even gotten there.
Yeah.
Because it's really more of just like a giant safari track. Like it actually kind of seems...
A like I
kind of feel like yeah, like once you see one dinosaur, wouldn't you just be like kind of like, ugh, like now I'm just trapped in this car?
Yeah,
I've seen dinosaurs already.
You're saying Jungle Cruise?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like Jurassic World. At least they have like the hamster ball, like gyrosphere ride that they can go on, even though it's insanely dangerous with the mutated dinosaur.
Yeah.
And there's no automatic callback button, so whatever, man, you know, safety first.
If I was going to make Jurassic Park, I would have just made like a massive roller coaster that went all around, like the world's largest roller coaster that went through different pens and stuff.
So when it breaks down, it stops in the Velociraptor thing, and then all the families that are trapped on the roller coaster are just basically like hanging there with jumping Velociraptors nipping at their feet. You know, by the time we got it working, everybody's coming out. They're all dead because they've been bleeding out through their feet that are no longer there. Yeah. God, Aaron, way to take it to a dark place. Yeah, that's where my mind goes. You're welcome.
You're like, I don't remember what his name is, but the one guy who's like clearly been working there for a while, the one who gets like the clever girl guy. I don't know what his name is. You can just tell he's the one who knows that this place is fucked.
He's like, so jaded.
Like when he's like, I knew we should have got locks for the doors. Yeah. You should have, like, that should have been item number one. No, like, no layperson should be allowed to just get off the ride and chase after dinosaurs.
Well, and they walk into the lab, and they're all in their grubby outdoor clothes. Who knows how long the helicopter ride was to get here, you know, and everyone else is in, like, clean room type clothing where they're all it's just like, well, I guess sanitation doesn't really matter in this case.
Yeah, screw your sanitization procedures. We'll infect these dinosaurs with whatever disease we wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're kind of weirdly I found them to be weirdly disrespectful to the situation. Like, you've been invited to experience this once in a lifetime thing, but it's like from the get-go, all these invited guests kind of just act like it's their own show. Like they don't even take the time to really listen to everything Hammond has to say or show them. They're just so like, we want to see that. We want to see that. How are you doing that? Let's go. And then they, you know,
well, and is
they just go off and do their own thing.
Is John Hammond going to be on location for every tour that comes through? Because he's got that whole thing set up where he talks to himself on the screen where he doesn't know his lines. Come on, John. You're opening in a few weeks, aren't you? But
oh, yeah. Note cards.
Yeah. Is he going to be there every time that there's a tour?
Well, I mean, he must be because he says he's there for literally every single birth of every single dinosaur that happens.
So what if a tour's happening and the a baby is cracking an egg? Huh?
Oh man, I don't know. How do
who,
you make,
who takes
flip,
priority?
Flip a coin?
Who takes priority, John?
I definitely like the cheap raptor effects that they have going on though in the beginning of the movie, so that you don't really have to see the raptors right away. Because, I mean, of course, you know, Alan Grant is all upset about you bred raptors. I mean, he talks in this movie like he's got a personal vendetta against raptors. Like, they killed his grandmother or something like that, and he's seeking revenge.
he talks about them like he actually knew anything about them. Like, that was kind of one of my things about Alan, is that a paleontologist can't actually know anything. Like, it's all suggestion. It's all like theorizing based on like kind of, you know, generally taking like the dinosaur skeleton and like kind of extrapolating it to like animals you can see today, but you don't actually know how it would have behaved,
like hunting patterns. Yeah,
you can't say like, yeah, I don't even know that he would know. How would you know that a velociraptor hunts that way?
Yeah,
I want to say it wasn't even until what, the third one, till they actually knew what a velociraptor sounded like.
Yeah
Like, and that's the interesting thing about you know, paleontology and you know, archaeology and all these things. It's like, yeah, you're right, it's all speculation. You know, we have no idea what dinosaurs could have been purple and green and had spots. We don't know what their skin looked like, you know. Yeah. They're still trying to figure that out. I mean, mammoths, at least they found like, you know, completely frozen mammoths in like glacial ice, and they're actually able to see what those creatures were like. But anything before that has been dwindled away.
I'm surprised those haven't been cloned yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
yeah,
like when he sees the Brachiosaurus and it's traveling in herds, he's all amazed, like, oh, I finally got confirmation of this like thing that until now I had only assumed. Mm-hmm. But with the velociraptors, he's acting like he's the foremost authority on velociraptor activity in the world.
Yeah. like I was saying, though, we do have the cheap effects, though, of just the rustling of the leaves when they lower the cow in. I mean, it's like outstanding. That's the way to do it with these guys.
I thought that was a very well done part of this movie, of not giving you the dinosaurs you want to see right away. Like, even the T-Rex, it's such a slow burn before you finally get to see the shot of that T-Rex come over the fence.
Yeah.
It really just, story-wise, I mean, it just kind of hooks you and keeps you wanting more until they finally give it to you.
They don't put the cart before the horse in that one.
I realized in my notes here, I've got look this guy up, and I never did, so I got to look this guy up. Okay, so he has the line when they go out on their tour, you know, and he says, the voice you hear is Richard Kiley. And I'm like, and he says, we spared no expense. And I'm like, who's Richard Kiley? Let's see. He was in Patch Adams. he was in the Rockford Files phenomenon. Okay, well, yeah, I guess they spared no expense. They got Richard Kiley. Good for them.
Now I want to know who Richard Kiley is. Jeez. This is the person I've seen absolutely nothing of.
Yeah.
The Twilight Zone, maybe. Oh, well.
So we get to see, you know, a young-ish Sam Jackson in his only role, probably, where he doesn't say motherfucker at least once.
Shame. That's a shame. You've ever heard one.
The one thing I noticed about Arnold in this movie that I found funny was the fact that I'm 3 days away from being a non-cigarette smoker for a year, right? And so, I mean, you know, you see me vaping over here, but I haven't touched a cigarette in a year. And but watching Sam Jackson in this movie, I was really watching his cigarette because he's always got one in his hand, but it seemed like it was getting shorter as the movie went on. Like, it seemed intentionally. I mean, because I'm sorry, I was fixated on it. I'm doing pretty good after a year, but I mean, I notice a cigarette, you know, every once in a while. But yeah, it looked like, continuity wise, it looked like they almost just banged out all his scenes just in one take while he was smoking the same cigarette. I was just wondering whether it was an intentional choice that he always, you know.
Saves on prop money, you know?
People always mention Sam Jackson in this movie, but it's not a movie that I ever think of him.
No, not really. That's true.
Hold On to Your Butts is so iconic. I don't know. Maybe now I'll think of it more.
So I noticed something on this viewing that I've never noticed before. But on the T-Rex paddock, when they get there in their little tour, it says no photography. And I'm like, you know, fuck you and your no photography. I mean, if you spent like, you know, let's say it's $5,000 to get to the island. Let's say that's what a trip to Jurassic Park costs. $5,000 and I don't get a picture? Come on. I mean, no flash photography, that I could get, but no photography?
I was like, maybe it's because the pictures would, like, scare the dinosaurs or something like that, or maybe there's proprietary things that they don't want to get out, but it does seem odd that, you know, I mean, I guess there was no social media then, but that seems like built-in advertising.
Yeah, like every once in a while our science center gets, you know, like a touring display of something. They've had the Marvel and Star Wars. I remember when the Harry Potter one came to town and I was so excited and went to it, and it was a no photography exhibit, and I'm like, fuck you and your no photography. Like, I spent like an extra $12 to get in here. I'm gonna snap a couple pictures under my arm, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to pretend I'm talking to texting somebody on my phone.
That's right.
No photography. What a joke.
So one of my favorite lines that is always that I think of in this movie is, that is one big pile of shit. Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's still flirtatious with her after, even after she plunges her arm into the, all the way up to the armpit in the pile of shit.
Yeah, she really took that glove just really to the hilt in that pile of shit.
Yeah.
I kind of have a gripe to pick about the ship pile.
It's too big, right?
Yeah, like
thank
next
you.
Time you watch the movie,
thank you.
Think, yeah, like think of the scale of the Triceratops you've just witnessed to these three piles of poop. Like the poop is as big as the dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah. It's an elephant-sized animal when you see it.
And so part of me was like, when Ellie's like, "Oh, well, there's no berries in here," I was like, "Well, I think you probably got the wrong poop."
Yeah,
like maybe that's a T-Rex dump.
That might be the Brachiosaurus poop. That seems a little more to scale.
Right? Yeah, I agree with that. That was just, I always thought that too. I was like, how did he get up that high?
Yeah.
Is he like one of those pugs that like kind of, you know, like you see the videos of them like kind of like raising up on their front legs and whatever. But that's
or do they push it into a pile? Do they, you know, like they've got the horns on top. Do they shovel it with like a pitchfork into a pile?
Oh God, that's a horrible thought. Oh God.
And they were lying on it.
Aaron, do you watch South Park?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Well, there's an episode of South Park where Stan's dad is basically trying to win a contest for the world's biggest shit. And he's going head-to-head with Bono from U2.
Wow.
And at the end, there's this scene where he takes a dump and it's like, it's just this like spiral up of like poop. And I was like, maybe that's how the Triceratops poops, where it's kind of like it just starts and it just builds up. And then it just walks down. I don't know.
like a frozen yogurt machine?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry if I ruined frozen yogurt for you.
Oh, God, no. Who hasn't made that connection over the years? Come on. That's the first thing you think of.
So when I went to training, this is kind of a stupid story. When I went to training a few years ago for the job that I'm in right now.
Oh, you're a fro-yo master?
No. So I do public affairs for my, basically public relations, public affairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went to school with a bunch of younger crowd because I was being retrained in this career field. And so the younger kids had this clique. They were all hanging out. They're all together, and they used to start. They started doing this thing at the dining facility for like dinner, called Stupid Cones, and it was basically who could make the stupidest ice cream cone, like an ice cream situation. And it was like some people would just take like you know the whole cone and just put like a little dollop of ice cream and just smash the whole thing in their face.
Yeah.
Or one of the funniest things was this guy took an ice cream cone. I think this is the winner, the clear winner in my brain. He took that pointy-ass ice cream cone and turned it upside down and then put the stack of ice cream on the pointy part of it.
Nice. Genius.
And I was like, that's it. That wins. Sorry, but that was my what you were reminding me of when we started talking about frozen yogurt and little spiral. So pointless story, but you know, you got it. Welcome. You're welcome.
Well, I mean, the other way the story could have gone is if I had said, I mean, we've all seen Two Girls, One Cup, right?
Oh. true. Or never, and I tell you this, never Google Tub Girl.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
I should put a little bleep over just that. What girl? What girl?
Just leave people guessing.
So we've got a hurricane coming, so we've got to evacuate the island. And so Nedry has to begin his heist with his Barbasol container.
Oh, it's a heist movie now.
It is a heist movie. But before we get to the heist, I need to talk about that Barbasol can because I think it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week Jurassic Park is brought to you by Ford and Jeep, BF Goodrich Tires, Elmer's Glue, Barbasol Shaving Cream, Moet and Chandon Champagne, Continental Airlines, Silicon Graphics, Panasonic, Apple Macintosh Computers, SVS Surveillance Video Systems, Nike, and Jolt Cola. Oh man, I love me a can of Jolt. I miss Jolt. And of course, brought to you by the fictional Jurassic Park and all the many, many pieces of merchandise that are shown in this movie. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Spared no expense.
One of the things I thought was weird about the Jurassic Park merchandise is that, and I mean, I guess it's not like you could have the people action figures, but there was a massive toy line sparked by Jurassic Park, but they never used any of the actual dinosaur action figures in the movie.
Well, I think the figures came out after the movie, but all the merch that you see in the movie came out with the movie.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the toy line was something that was just after Jurassic Park itself.
I remember they had a cool, like a bunch of like dinosaurs, and they, you know, like you'd have like the T-Rex versus the Triceratops.
Yeah, and there, like, there were battle had, like, damage ones.
Exactly. They had like, you know, part of their rib cage was exposed because the T-Rex. I was like, this is a toy for kids?
Yep. Sure is. When Nedry starts his heist and he starts loading the samples into the Barbasol container, there's like this pan flute that plays that's an awful lot like Mandalorian music to me, where I'm like, no, that's the wrong vibes. You're giving me Mandalorian vibes, not heist vibes.
I'm pretty sure also there were like several, like when he goes in there, I'm pretty sure that like the Tyrannosaurus Rex label was misspelled and the Stegosaurus label was misspelled also.
Yeah.
like there were actual like typos in the middle in the movie, like because they didn't know how to spell Tyrannosaurus. I think they spelled it with like one N.
Yeah.
I was wondering if they were doing it to make it seem like Nedry was kind of an idiot. Because he clearly has like you know, job performance and money problems and accepts no responsibility for it. So I was wondering if maybe that was just kind of a way to show him that he's actually inept.
Yeah, his pigsty of a desk, he's got no social cues. He's not very good at faking it when he's trying to get away. So I'm just going to go to the bathroom, and this is just going to do its update. Like, come on, man. But unfortunately, that would probably be me in a heist situation. I'd be like, so I got to go do something. I'll be right back.
What are you going to go do, huh?
I promise.
Did you clock out?
So the car's are coming back to the building and they break down just outside the T-Rex paddock. Okay, I've never understood the T-Rex paddock, because once the dinosaur comes out, and like the dinosaur, once the fences are, you know, de-electrified, just bursts through, no problem. But when the car goes over the wall, it's like a 60-70 foot embankment on the way down. How did the T-Rex get over what seems to be a moat? Why is the ground so low? But like, I don't understand it.
The logistics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They don't. They do a good job in the movie of
not like focusing on it.
Of not focusing on it, and you never really see an exact layout of the park.
Yeah.
Of like the topography, I guess, of the park to really know how it kind of functions area-wise.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. Because I could understand them having a cliff around to separate as a barrier. You see that in zoos. But, yeah, in this case, though, how did he get across? Because if he was able to step across this chasm, obviously it wasn't wide enough.
Maybe he climbed the tree.
Yeah, his tiny little arms. I want like that scene. It. I want the extended cut. Release the Spielberg cut. I still also love just the cheap special effect nature of the glass of water. And it's like a legendary thing, but where they just figured out they need to attach like a guitar string or a cello string or something and pluck it. And that's how you get the perfect ripples. Nowadays they just CGI that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like from I think probably for the next 20 years, if you ever had a glass of water that was just sitting there and you were bored, you smack that table. You smack that table, you make the ripples, you know.
Yeah,
that's the thing I remember most about that movie for some reason, is just the way that water. I feel like I watched some sort of documentary at the time that said that they they created their ripples using some sort of like guitar string.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're just plucking it. That's what gives you the perfect concentric circle.
I think I also remembered, you know, Dr. Ian Malcolm and his very flirtatious scene explaining chaos. And I'm just like, that dude's smooth AF.
Yeah, the between that and when he's like lounging with his shirt open later on after like they survived the T-Rex. I mean, yeah, those are the scenes that it's like, yeah, okay, I'd bang Jeff Goldblum.
let's remember, not all of them survived the T-Rex.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And of course, like in the
when you gotta go, you gotta go. You know.
Yeah, typical fashion that scene's gonna happen: the lawyer, the toilet, and getting eaten. You know.
And I'm sure a lot of people are like, he deserved it.
Yeah. The T-Rex fight scene, though, is still very impressive. I mean, it's how it's all done with between the practical, and it's still a very exciting scene. And even the race against the car falling through the tree, immediately following it. I mean, some really high stakes. And then the movie just like stops for a little while. All of a sudden, it's very calm. They're sleeping in a tree, you know.
It's very family friendly from this for quite a while.
For quite a while, yeah. Until we get back to the kitchen with the, you know, with the velociraptors hunting them in the kitchen.
Yeah,
but
I do feel like I was kind of gauging every character goes through throughout the movie, and I gotta say that Tim, I think, gets the worst of it. Like, that kid cannot catch a break.
Yeah,
very true, very true. From he's like, I threw up.
Yeah, but Lex gets sneezed on. There is that.
Oh, pfft.
Yeah, Timmy's electrocution, and then you know it comes to with the three, finishes his count. Yeah, I don't understand how that kid's not dead.
Should be. That kid should be like just a puddle of goo next to that fence.
Yeah. Also, when they race down the tree and they get to the bottom and Timmy starts delivering his lines there, it totally gave me Stevie from Malcolm in the Middle vibes, where he's like, I'm okay now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, when they go, must go faster, must go faster.
Yeah.
Coming down that tree, that was definitely that was a tense moment. I'm not gonna lie. I think my heart was kind of racing during that one.
Yeah. And then when they get into the tree, I mean, he has his cuddle moment with the kids or whatever, and talking about the brachiosauruses, but he takes the raptor claw out of his pocket and just chucks it away. I mean, I imagine this is supposed to be symbolic of the fact that, like, what good am I now that, like, they've brought dinosaurs back to life? But it's kind of like, if you swam with sharks on the regular and you had a shark tooth on a necklace, you would still wear that even with the existence of sharks. So why wouldn't you still keep this badass souvenir?
The only thing I could think of is that it's a fossilized version, or maybe it's like a replica.
Oh, maybe it's
that he keeps with him. And now he's like, you know what? The replica means nothing. Maybe now I can get an actual one.
I'm going to hunt one of these assholes and take one for myself.
I'm taking it back. This is my world.
Crocodile Dundee wears teeth on his hat. I mean,
well, that he took those from real gators, though.
That's right.
Or crocodiles.
Yeah. So, yeah, Grant ends up finding eggs. We find out that the frog DNA fucks with the DNA of the dinosaurs. And so some of them are changing gender. And then we get our Gallimimus chase. I wrote that one down. That one is still a pretty cool scene. I still really like the Gallimimus chase.
That's the one across the field, right?
Yeah.
With all, like the whole flock of them, but they're actually being chased by... What are they being chased
by? The T-Rex is chasing the Gallimimuses, yeah. But we don't know that until the end.
Yeah, that was definitely one of those ones. That right there, I think that was one of the iconic trailer scenes that really pulled everybody into this film. Because they're just like... Right, you know, it got crazy, and that was really, again, that's, I think, I would never call this movie like badly paced. I think they did a really good job of kind of like balancing it out. It was almost like an orchestra, you know, like it's, you know, you got your high rises, and then all of a sudden you got your kind of your lulls, and then boom, brings it right back with that Gallimimus chase.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I felt like the movie, it builds so much up to the T-Rex, and then after the night in the night in the tree, it moves at such a clip all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I remember there being a lot more drama and suspense with the raptors, like even to get to the point where the one guy like gets sidelined by the hunting raptor pack there.
When Muldoon, yeah.
Clever girl.
Yeah. I have a note here that says instead of giving Timmy CPR, you should have just thrown him against the fence again. Oh man, I was a funny bastard when I watched this movie.
That would have... That's funny.
So everyone gets back to the visitor center. I mean, you know, Hammond was there eating ice cream, but now the kids are back and they all chow down. But that's when the raptors come in.
That's when the raptors came.
Or sorry, yeah, everyone else takes off, right? But yeah, the raptors come in. Yeah, and they can open doors. Of course they know how to open doors. Why not, right? Yeah, Alan Grant has been right about everything else about their intelligence and whatnot.
They're super smart raptors.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But I'd never really noticed that almost everyone ends up with like a leg injury in this movie. Like, What is it about the legs? Because like Ellie is limping at one point. Malcolm has his leg in a splint. Timmy starts limping at one point. Hammond walks with a cane.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe I got nothing. You can't run from dinosaurs with a leg injury.
It just adds a little bit, the limping, the running limp, it just adds kind of a little bit of a, you know, tenseness to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe it's something for the audience, because it's like everybody knows what it's like to like twist your ankle and have to like get out of somewhere, like, or you can empathize a little bit more by seeing somebody with a leg injury and be like, oh, I know what that's like. Like that must hurt, and oh my gosh, they have to run before the T-Rex gets them. That must be really hard. Maybe it's a tactic like that.
Oh, I got shin splints. Oh god. Not running far. Just go without me, guys. I'm cool.
Well, and when they get to the point where like they've been chased through the kitchen and they somehow trick the one, because the one cupboard is like mirror quality reflection, but they get into the vents at one point, and that's the point that the guy that I was talking about earlier, where he picked up his feet and curled into a ball and started screaming, was when Lex falls through the vents and then she manages to climb up just as one of the raptors jumps at her.
Oh yeah.
The only CGI that really doesn't hold up in this movie is the deep fake of the Lex's face over the stunt woman's face. That one's a little rough. I've never liked that one. Would have been better funny to pixelate her face for a moment.
I think out of all of the characters, I think Lex for me was just because of her constant fear and just like, you know, it's like it's just that trembling lip character.
Yeah,
just I think that was the only one. Like the kid at least has like this character arc of being kind of scared, being nerdy, but he like holds his own, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
she never really has like any kind of redemption other than just being kind of like a scared, you know, older sister.
Yeah,
well she has her hacker moment.
Oh, she does sudden, have her hacker
well all
moment,
of a sudden
yeah.
her being a the mention of her being a hacker about 45 minutes earlier comes into play.
I'm not a programmer. I'm a hacker. That's what I said. Like, where are we at in the movie, I guess?
I mean, I feel like we're kind of at the final, like, final battle. That's sort of where I've made my way to is...
So I think the parts that I would remember around here is you have... Obviously, we got the phones. We've got phones. You know, you've got the scene... My God, the scene where Arnold Samuel L. Jackson's character is finally like disarmed.
Nice,
but you know that was one of the scarier moments I think for the whole thing. But there's like the real question is like, why is that power station so friggin' far away?
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, can anybody answer me that?
Yeah.
Like who designed this?
What kind of radiation is it putting off that you don't want your lab near it?
Yes. There's so many, like, the whole design structure of Jurassic Park, that's where they, like, were pretty much doomed from the beginning. Like, this place is just terribly, terribly designed.
Yeah, like, if the lawyer survived what he should have reported, like, They also need like an occupational health and safety person to do an assessment because
Where's OSHA?
I was just thinking about this, like I know the security system is deactivated, but does the security system being deactivated mean that like all locks on everything open up? Like
if anything, they should all just lock and stay locked.
Yeah, it feels like it feels like other doors should be shutting.
Yeah, I'm not 100%. I'm not 100% on how the raptors escape their pen. I get why the T-Rex, because it's a large animal and it's like a, you know, it's a fence. Like I get the T-Rex being strong enough to just break through that, sure. But when we first see the raptors, like when that cow, it's like it's lowered into this like enclosure. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know they can say jump, in the
book,
but
yeah, I want to say that in the book it was because they did not like basically the raptors were smart enough to where they weren't showing because they were testing like the perimeter and they knew that they were basically enclosed, but they weren't kind of like they were smart enough to not reveal their true potential as far as like their abilities. And so I think when the power did go off, they were able to like somehow either jump and like catch their way out, like off of the crane, or there was some way that they were able to jump their way out of it.
I want the scene of them making like a ladder, you know, a velociraptor ladder.
One hopping the other's back.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and, you know, one hanging over the edge, pulling one up, you know?
Barrel of monkeys.
It's just that the way things play out, it almost seems like the electrical building was put in the raptor.
Yeah, I think that would have been the thing for me is like, okay, we're going to there's a hurricane coming in. We're going to evacuate the island, make sure the doors are locked.
Yeah.
Like but also, like manually lock everything.
You should be building...
The battery died in your key fob. Yeah. Come on, you need to do it by hand.
The last thing that we want is to come back on Tuesday when the storm is over and everything is loose. Because I don't care if it's a hacker, if it's Nedry the hacker who shut down your system, or if it's just because the storm, like, you know, like knocked out power and all of a sudden the velociraptors learn how to open doors. But like,
I'm also just thinking like later, like when the T-Rex comes in to save the day, that also exposes what must be a massive design flaw in how this like civilian centered compound is constructed. Because to me, if I know that I have very large dinosaurs and presumably dinosaurs that could fly, I would build that compound in a giant circle with the most massive of walls and probably a like caged roof. So that like the whole goal would be
boat.
Like, yeah, the whole goal would be like when emergency happens, everything is locked down, nothing can come in.
Were any of the doors tall enough for a T-Rex to fit through though? How did he get in?
The King Kong door, I assume, like would have been built enough for him to.
No, but for the building.
Kong was the gate like into the actual park.
Yeah,
not the welcome center.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, the T-Rex didn't open the door. He can't reach. Oh man, I'm just picking on the T-Rex. I'm sorry.
I mean, does he break? Does he break through a wall? I don't remember.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Pick someone your own size. I'm trying to like I'm looking through like the photos right now and I'm trying to see if there's actually any photos of the welcome center, like the entrance, and I don't see anything that has pictured the doors at all.
Yeah, I mean, it must have crashed through one of the walls. It must have, and I'm just forgetting that part.
I mean, I don't remember a significant. I think somebody would have heard this T-Rex break a fucking wall down, pardon my language.
Yeah, I think so too. But I mean,
there's like 50 photos of all in black and white of the cast, and it's just all of them going. even a velociraptor going. It's great. Yeah.
I do think that the end scene of that movie, when T-Rex comes in and saves the day and has the big roar with the banner falling down, in my mind, it's like it's probably number one of most iconic. Like movie stills that have ever been done.
Okay, now here's your trivia. What does the banner say?
when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
There you go.
I think.
Yeah. I thought it's ruled the earth, actually.
Or maybe it's ruled the earth, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, see, I can't remember either. But it's iconic.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Jurassic Park. Now, Colin, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 8.2 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 68. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 92% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 91%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, I don't know. Let's go back to, like a dinosaur eating a lawyer. hit us with some reviews. That doesn't work. I don't know.
All right. Moving on. Anyways. I mean, this one was tough. No, I don't know if there's a person on the world who hates Jurassic Park. Literally, yeah. the only negative review I read was somebody nitpicking on it because it didn't follow the book good enough.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Actually, that one of those guys.
Yeah. Other than that, it was pretty glowing. So Alex O gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "While having a good story, great cast, and the best dino carnage, Jurassic Park is arguably one of the best movies of all time, other than some modern movies and Top Gun." We've come full circle.
That's all we need for reviews tonight.
Top Gunception. That's what that just was.
That's right.
You planned that. You planned that, didn't you?
Professor Jay says 5 out of 5 stars. The Jurassic Park franchise is beginning to look a little dated nowadays, but this first installment still holds up. It is the first film in which dinosaurs actually looked real, and the T-Rex remains the best depiction of this creature ever to appear on film. Yep. The raptors, stated to be Velociraptor, but actually based on the larger Deinonychus, lack feathers and are overly intelligent, but this does at least follow the book it was based on. A great action flick for anyone who likes dinosaurs, full of memorable scenes and quotable lines. Life finds a way.
He's a professor. I want to see his credentials.
Yeah.
What professor? You should be grading papers and not giving reviews on Jurassic Park, my friend.
Yeah, damn, son. You just got professored.
The last one I got is from Christian D. 5 out of 5 stars. Jurassic Park to me is the movie that not only introduced me to dinosaurs, but also introduced me to my love of movies. Steven Spielberg made such a masterpiece, we're still watching and talking about it nearly 30 years later. The main characters are lovable and relatable. The CGI and practical effects still hold up to this day, even looking better than most modern movie CGI. The story is well written, and no matter how many times I watch it, enough to quote the entire movie, I'll never get bored of it. To me, this is a contender for best movie of all time, or at least top 10. To me, it is always going to be my number one movie, and when I have kids, I'll show them this film. Who knows? It may even inspire them to love films like it do with me. Grammar broke down a little bit, but...
I'm calling bullshit.
Oh, yeah? Why are you calling bullshit?
Yeah. I'm calling bullshit because he starts this review off with that Jurassic Park was the film that introduced him to dinosaurs. Excuse me, have you never seen a book about dinosaurs? Have you never seen a commercial about your local museum? Have you never had a pair of dinosaur pajamas?
I know.
All right?
Footy pajamas.
Are you kidding me?
Absolutely.
He's also clearly our age, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, have you never seen The Land Before Time? I mean, come
exactly.
On now. Come on now.
Exactly.
Let's go.
Bullshit. Sorry.
Right on. So yeah, like I said, 8.2 and 91 from audiences and 68, that one blows my mind, and 92 from critics. Which one of the Jurassic franchise is your favorite? Is it this one?
Me?
Sure.
I would say this will probably rank as my favorite of the Jurassic series.
Yeah.
Really, because, you know, again, as I say, the sequels really take it to a level that was unnecessary, simply because they just wanted to make the story. Maybe they felt that the original wasn't as grand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like just like Colin said earlier, it started off as a really good question about ethics, about creationism, about, you know, the morale, the good and bad of genetic tampering. And, you know, as Ian Malcolm said, you know, they never considered, they thought about it if they could, they never considered if they should, you know, do these things. And so I will always say that this one kind of has the more of a, it's definitely going to be my favorite and stand the test of time versus the other ones that were more about story and action and less about, you know, the real message in it.
So on this viewing, how do you feel revisiting Jurassic Park? Like, where do you fall? I mean, if you want to go to your David A. Weiner scale because that's what you're comfortable with, then, you know, go ahead. Out of 5 David A. Weiners, what would you give this movie on this viewing?
You know, I would give it, on this viewing, I would probably give it I want to say a 3.5. 3.5 feels kind of low, but at the same time, I don't want to necessarily give it like a 4, but it definitely like a 3.5 because it's not a great movie.
Yeah.
And by any means, it's not a, like, it's not a perfect film. It's not a great film. It's not, but it is a piece of cinematic history. And the fact that, you know, that we're still making sequels to it, not remasters, not reboots. Mm-hmm. You know, we're making direct sequels to this movie that came out in what, 93?
Yeah.
You know, so nearly 30 years later, and it's an amazing piece of cinematic history for what it's done and what it's still giving. So I think that, you know, for me, it's still special. Yeah. And I think that it definitely gets a 3.5 because of the characters, the story itself, the pacing, the music, the practical effects, like effects that we talked about, the CGI. A 3.5.
Yeah, see, I know there's sometimes that I listen to your show and I'm like, oh, you guys need to start going to the quarter. You know, 3.75, come on. but you guys only hit it up at the 0.5. But Colin, same question to you. Is this the best of the Jurassic franchise for you? And, you know, what do you think on this viewing?
I think it has to be the best. I haven't seen all of the sequels enough. Like, I've honestly probably only seen all the sequels once each.
Okay.
So I haven't really seen them enough to really judge, but I just find that none of them were as memorable as the first one. And none of them were like, yeah, I don't know. This one, it's hard to divorce it from nostalgia. Because I remember it being such, like I said before, such a game changer.
Yeah.
I think on this watch, again, it was almost, I felt like I was watching it with new eyes.
Yeah.
Because I haven't watched it in so long. And the last time I watched it, I probably wasn't, I don't know, as knowledgeable about like filmmaking or like story mechanics. So like watching it now with kind of a fresh perspective, I picked up on a lot more of, Even why and how everybody got to be on the island to visit the park. Like, I don't think I ever cared about that as a kid. I just was like, get to the park so I can see the T-Rex, goddammit.
Yeah.
and so that was interesting. And even the relationships were, I just kind of understood. I think that would be my takeaway. I understand this movie a little better than I probably ever did when I watched it when I was younger.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised by it. I honestly expected to watch it and it not hold up at all.
Yeah.
Like, I expected to watch it and be like, oh, like, this isn't as good as I remember. But the CGI is still great. The practical effects are still great. And the story is fairly basic, but I think it's a fun watch. It's a fun movie to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, that young director might have a future ahead of him. I mean, he kind of knocked it out of the park on this one.
One of the things that's kind of crazy in the Movies That Made Us documentary on this one was Steven Spielberg went immediately from directing this movie to directing Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Like, how do you make that mental transition?
And he was working on editing for this film while he was working on Schindler's List. I mean, that would probably be the highlight of your day where it's just like, okay, at least I have, you know, some dinosaurs to look forward to because this is heavy.
Yeah. I will say, in terms of my favorite Jurassic Park movie, for whatever reason, I remember really liking The Lost World.
Yeah.
I think that's the one where, like, they have the baby T-Rex and they bring it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really remember, and that one, like, Malcolm is the main guy in that one, right?
I believe so.
Yes. Is that right? Yeah, yeah, I remember really liking
John
that
Hammond
movie.
Dies, and I remember the T-Rex crashing through a Blockbuster video.
Well, yeah, because like they tried. That was the one where they it just seemed like they were the movie would just not end.
That's right.
Because yeah, they literally somebody uses the T-Rex baby to lure they break its leg, and so they try and take it back to their like cool like Winnebago, fix its leg, and then the T-Rex comes back. They got to give it to him, and you think like, oh well, that's gonna be kind of the movie. Then all of a sudden, it's like. All these hunters are catching these dinosaurs and trying to camp them out and take them back to the United States. And it's like, God, how far are they going to go? It was basically like King Kong.
Yeah.
You know, like a ripoff of King Kong. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so was the book.
Very true. That's, I'd say, again, Lost World and Jurassic Park were the two books of Crichton's that I did read from this series. I don't remember if there were more, but yeah, it was definitely a wild ride.
Yeah, like yeah. The Lost World, I know for me is one of those where there are certain movies where in the franchise the first two are the best and that's all you ever care about, and it's kind of, you know, like Ninja Turtles, you know, and so yeah. that's how I feel about Jurassic Park. Is the first two are my favorite, the other ones are good, but the first two are my favorite. But yeah,
there's a reason for that. The first two Ninja Turtles were done by the Jim Henson Company. For animatronics. Yeah. The third one was not, and you can absolutely tell, and that's what ruins it for me.
Yeah. Well,
the third one is just a giant toy advertisement. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Which worked on me.
Yeah, I'd want to argue that it's not just the Jim Henson contribution. I'd want to say that there's probably some script issues in that one as well.
True.
Yeah.
But it was cool seeing them travel through time and wear samurai garb.
Also,
and then have the toy.
Yeah, and then have the toy.
Also, that movie introduced me to Tarzan Boy, and so, I mean, if that was the only good that came out of it, I guess it's a good movie.
Fair.
Yeah, on this watch, I mean, I'm gonna go, like, yeah, it's a 75% 80 movie. I agree with what Aaron said, where it's just like, objectively, it's not the best movie. But it is a book adaptation, and those are always kind of rushed in weird ways. And I remember there was a part of me when I first saw it that was a little bitter that it was changed. But now that my cinema knowledge has expanded and I've seen more terrible, terrible book adaptations, it's like, oh, okay, Jurassic Park was okay. You know, I can look past that. I don't have to be that nerd that, actually, you guys, yeah, I'm not that anymore. You forgot the aviary scene. Yeah, so... it's still Jurassic Park. It's still fun. It's still the original, and it's still a classic. Good movie for me. Yeah.
Huzzah. Harumph. Harumph. Harumph.
Well, there we go. That is Jurassic Park, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A big, huge thank you to our guest, Aaron Knowles. Aaron, plug your shit.
Well, that's uncomfortable. No.
Oh, especially after our conversation about the Triceratops earlier. Okay, yes. Yeah. Aaron, tell people where they can find you on the interwebs and the essential things people need to know about you.
Awesome. Well, let me just say, Colin and Sean, thank you so much for having me on the show. It was definitely a pleasure being here, and it's a pleasure knowing that you guys are out there listening to our show as well, and I'm definitely going to keep tuning into your guys. This was such a fun conversation for me, but if people do want to check me out, check out me and my co-host Chris Hacker on the Oblivion Bar podcast. We are pretty much on all podcasting platforms: Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. You can find us on social media on all platforms: Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and actually on Whatnot as well at Oblivion Bar Pod. So check us out anywhere. It'd be great to you know, have you guys, you know, come and listen and check us out and see what we're about. And it's just, you know, it's a good time. Me and Chris talk comics, movies, shows, video games, Twitch, and just, you know, everything. It's a nerd culture podcast, so that's the podcast.
And new stuff, not old stuff like us. And of course, you also have your personal endeavor, your Better Actions TV Twitch channel as well. I mean, tell people where to find that.
Well, you can find me also, yeah, like Sean was saying, twitch.tv/betteractions. That's my gaming Twitch channel. Less so much now, more recently, I've been doing more stuff, so you can check me out at Shred the Stress on pretty much any social media platform. That's my nonprofit, where I'm actually putting a lot more time into that because it's just a little bit more of a personal fulfillment. So it's just helping veteran service members and their families. If you guys want more information, you can go to www.shredthestress.org. Again, it's a 501c3 that helps service members, veterans, and families get rid of stress. We take them out on adventures, on electric skateboards, one wheels, like scooters, bikes, all that stuff. So it's a great time.
Now, for you, I mean, I know that you are a military man. What is your view on Muldoon and his handling of the weapon? Is it believable in this movie when he's out hunting? Does he handle it correctly?
You know, as I'm gonna go with no. There's so many times that these guys just like they literally like a cause, so he's got pretty much a you know, like a combat shotgun, like a tactical shotgun, and I feel like he's just waving that thing around like it's like he's in Harry Potter, like a magic wand. He's just waving that thing around, and like there's no like awareness of where the barrel is.
Yeah.
You know, so I you know, I would not hang out with that dude at a shooting range. Shooter.
And for Chris's sake, your partner over on the Oblivion Bar, let's also make sure we tip our bartenders.
Yes, absolutely. Make sure you tip your bartenders, your servers, because you know what? If you don't, you're kind of a jerk. Because, you know, even if they're not that great, they'd still deserve to get paid.
There we go. Got everything in. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell people. I did this math earlier this month, so, I mean, I've already got it locked and loaded. If everyone that listened to our show told someone else, we'd double our audience. It's that easy. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Give us some stars. We prefer 5 of them, but help drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed. Or you can go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, and you get to be an executive producer of the show. Get a shout out on our show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our bios, social media platforms, all that good stuff. Give us some comments, like shares. And if you would like to let us know what movies you used to like and maybe hear us talk about them on the show, you can email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more content from me, follow my other program, In Front of the Yellow Line. And thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Nice.
Nah, man, yeah, I appreciate you guys. I had a blast.